try again. Yeah, right. That one was even funnier than the last one. Everything I say is so funny. Everything. Chorus. Everything I say is so funny. Everything I say is so funny. I don't know how it happened. You don't question nature. You don't go asking whales why they're fat. Hey, that was pretty funny.
You're listening to Books, Beer, and Bullshit, the podcast that ain't a smodcast. I'm your decadent host, Mr. Frank.
And I'm your douchey host, Mr. Jeff.
We are here for the 10th time.
Number 10.
Number 10, and we're going to really switch things up.
Yeah, we need a little shake up in the format, don't we?
Yeah, we do. We've been schedules have been very hectic lately. We've been spending the last couple of weekends at concerts and, family matters.
Yeah.
Everything has just bogged us down to get this thing recorded. What we had, though, was not time to record the podcast, but to discuss where the podcast is headed.
We're going to try something different for you this
right.
This
I think
episode.
We're going to be trying a lot of something different from here on out.
It's going to stay the same format.
Yeah.
Format. Books,
it's always
beer, and bullshit.
Books, beer, and bullshit. But
just how we go about conveying our books, beer, and bullshit.
Yeah, we've really married ourselves hardcore to book review and shitty beer. And I think we're going to not move away from that entirely, but try different things also.
Different approaches.
Yeah. You know what it is? I don't know about you, and this is a little bit of bullshit to start with, is the podcast reading is definitely different from my own personal reading and your own personal reading.
Sure.
And while we didn't review anything this week, I took a huge, like, oh, it's nice to just read something that I want to read, you know.
Yeah, without having to have a deadline. Well, not that that's really ever been my problem with it,
right.
But just like...
Your own pace.
I could just go
no worries.
Read whatever I want.
Right.
Like, I actually put down the Nook after the last episode.
Yeah.
Honestly, I put it down.
I believe you.
And I went and reread some of my older books.
With paper?
With paper.
No shit, because
just
you know
for shit and giggles.
I did the exact thing. I actually won a book on Goodreads or one of their giveaways.
Right.
It's an excellent book that I'm reading now. And it's just been very enjoyable to just carry things along at my own pace and not have to worry about, you know, digging into the book deeper for the show and everything. So definitely part of the spawning for wanting to change things up. So as part of changing things up, as we discussed before, this time, no book reviews. We're doing top 10 lists.
Our top 10, what is it? What would you call us? Our top 10 favorite books, top 10 best books,
all
top
time.
10.
Top
all
10
time?
Of all time. And it's hard to gauge. I mean, you've read what you've read, and I've read what I've read.
Right.
Crossover not, but, you know.
I made up a list, personally.
Yeah.
This is what I did.
Yeah.
I went out and put together a list of 10 books that I really, truly enjoyed. Now, I'm not going to say they're the best books ever written, or maybe even the best books I've ever read.
Okay.
I may have read other ones and have forgotten, or I've read stuff so recently, I can't judge it. Against the test
yeah,
of time.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if I'm still thinking about a book that I read 10 years ago, 20 years ago, now it's back up. That's why a lot of, well, almost all the books, probably like 9 of the books were all written, where none of them were written in this century.
Not in this, in the 2000s and beyond?
No, not, one is, one yeah. is. I'm sorry. One is probably like right around.
And everything before that is 99 and earlier.
And earlier.
Uh-huh.
It's all kind of like old school. I put together, this is what, top 10 old school list.
Yeah, yeah.
For the most
well,
part.
Well, I think, and I agree with you, it's, now your list is in no particular order, right?
It's kind of in order.
Yeah.
It's kind of in top 10, but not really. Like, I couldn't choose, like, a number one book.
Right.
That was probably, like, my
the
biggest
hardest.
Part was saying, oh, which book is the best book here? And I just didn't want to, I really just didn't want to sit there and scratch my head for 3 hours.
I agree with you. It was.
And so I said, well, I'll just read this shit off as my top 10, and.
Right, in no particular,
in
but
no
it's,
really
it's
particular order.
Things that have stuck with you.
Yeah, stuck with me through.
Right, there
the
may
time.
Have been other things that you really love, but you know,
and
they didn't stick with you.
These are probably all books that I've read more than once.
Yeah,
I went back. I went back to double dip,
right.
triple dip, probably on some of them.
Uh huh.
You know, after 5 years go by or something, you go, man, Well, I know you don't agree with rereading books.
I don't know if it's an agreement, but it's not something I've ever done, and that's right. Probably a whole discussion for another podcast.
Yeah, probably. But I've popped back into some of these books from time to time.
Yeah, I can understand. Obviously, that's one of the strongest gauges for picking up your top 10.
That's kind of like what I did.
Yeah, I had sort of the same approach. I basically went back. For my list, you know, I keep track of everything I read with Goodreads, and that made this a little bit easier, where I just went anything I had rated 5 stars is pretty much, you know, going to be, you know, you find your way there, and then just pick off of that list the top 10. And it was easy getting 10 books, you know.
Right.
Hard, you know, a couple of ones I hated to whittle out, but I had to.
Yeah.
For different reasons. But I did order mine, and I was surprised at how easy I found it to actually put them in an order.
Really?
And but I agree with your point of, like, you know, in 2 months I might feel that 5 and 3 could interchange, like, you know, right. It can change.
Yeah.
But I feel strongly that, like you said, these are books that have stuck with me.
Also because I read cross genre so much.
Yeah.
I didn't make like a top 10 list of science fiction books.
No.
I mixed it up. So I probably left stuff out of this top 10 list.
Yeah.
That's probably maybe cooler than the other stuff, but just to keep it.
Yeah. So
keep
you're
it
not
diversified.
Yeah. All right. So I guess we'll start picking off. I mean, there's so much to even talk about the dynamics of these. I'm sure both of our lists
will
be interesting. So let's, you want to just trade off like 10, 10, 9, 9?
All right. Yeah.
All right. So kick me off with a number 10 for you.
Number 10 is The Stand by Stephen King.
Wow, The Stand by Stephen King.
The 1990 uncut edition.
Okay. It's definitely one of those books that you pick out 10 writers, 10 people. It's going to show up, I would say, better than 50% of people's.
Probably.
You know, especially if you're into horror, it would almost be a crime not to have The Stand on your list.
It would be.
Okay, my number 10 is going to be a vague one. It's called Ghosts and Lightning by Trevor Byrne. And it's actually a book out of Ireland.
What was it about? Let's get down to it.
It's basically like an Irish hooligans type of story. I guess part of what struck me, too, like I said, it was Irish, and it was written, the words were written with the Irish brogue. It's a weird one, but that's my number 10. It really has stuck with me. So let's hit number 9.
Can I get this book somewhere?
You could, yeah, absolutely.
Can I get it like on barnesandnoble.com?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, it's available?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I borrowed it as an ebook library book.
Oh, well then, there you go. Once it's an ebook, it's going to be somewhere.
Yeah.
All right, so number 9. My number 9 is going to be After Age by Yvonne Navarro, 1993. You get it for a Nook for $2.99. You should really look into this one. This is a good one.
Okay, and what is this?
This is vampires. This is a vampire novel.
Okay.
Where there's like the master vampire gets tired of hiding and unleashes the vampire virus upon the world. And it follows a bunch of, you know, survivors through their quest to find a way to beat the vampires.
Uh-huh.
But it's an awesome book.
Right.
I highly recommend it for $2.99. Like,
right.
You can't best $3 you ever spend.
And the name of that book again was?
After Age.
After Age. Okay, now my number 9, I don't know if you've read this one or not yet, but it's from our friend Mr. Brian Keene.
Yeah.
Dark Hollow. Dark Hollow is the story of the satyr. Satyr come back to life to mess with the town and try to impregnate everybody.
Yeah.
It's the first Keene I read, the book that got me into Keene, and there's not much more to say that. If you're going to look up Keene, go Dark Hollow. Just came out, republished by Deadite.
That's a good read. Good choice.
Number 8, sir.
What's my biggest number 8? All right, I'm going to hit you back with this one. This book is out of print. You can still pick it up used.
Yeah.
I saw it online. Among Mad Men by Jim Starlin. And this guy is actually a comic book writer.
Okay.
And I don't know if he wrote it or the co-author wrote it or whatnot. It's about the world where everybody has gone like crazy. And you can't, like homicidal maniac crazy. It follows the story of the guy who is kind of like the town sheriff.
Uh-huh.
And it takes place in like a small town. And something really different. It has like some illustrations in it and stuff.
It's not a graphic novel. It's
not
still
a graphic novel. It's a real, you know, book.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a tome, but you
know. Just couldn't help himself being a
yeah,
comic
and,
book writer.
I mean, it was a cool story about madness.
All right, I'll hit you up my number 8. World War Z, Max Brooks. I mean,
World War Z, awesome.
As far as I'm concerned, that's the Bible of zombie books.
That is a really good zombie book.
I mean, it's really insane what he accomplished as far as the broad scope of cultures that he brought into the whole thing. It was just an amazing book, and it's done with that, what do you call it, like an oral history.
Right.
It was a cool angle, very different. This one just, man, that was a hell of a book.
Yeah, it was.
So that's my number 8. Let's hit your number 7, sir.
I'm going to go Out of the Ashes. Book 1 of the Ashes series by William Johnstone.
Yeah, I've been waiting for this.
I knew was going to be in there. Yeah. Right? This is a right-wing rebuilding America after the nuclear holocaust.
There.
Yeah, it was originally written in 83.
Yeah,
but it got re-released in 2008.
Oh, okay.
So you can still buy them new from barnesandnoble.com, but it's in paperback only.
Right.
It was definitely pretty cool. It's a cool book. I enjoyed it.
I mean, you say 83. I mean, that screams that... Plotline just screams 80s Cold War.
Yeah, well, it's exactly like what's up. Yeah, there you go.
It was a popular series in its day, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it sold like probably like a bazillion books.
Yeah,
I mean, it sold so well they reissued it.
Yeah,
I mean, by the time they reissued it, I think he had like 30 books in the series.
Yeah,
so they were reissuing him one book a month. I loved it. The first 10 books I really liked, but like the first one was like really like.
That was the one. Okay. Number 7. My number 7 is, this is where I get a little non-fiction-y on your ass.
Alrighty.
We're going to go with The Omnivore's Dilemma by Michael Pollan.
Punched out.
Yeah, this is my, I have a thing for reading those, you know, those food culture books. And
I pulled the yellow handles.
Yeah. This is nothing that would ever intrigue you, but I have.
Go ahead, explain it.
I am a sucker for this shit.
You are.
You know, Jamie Oliver, Michael Pollan, Eric Schlosser. I'm all in, you know.
Right.
Marion Nestle, those books.
What is Omnivore's Dilemma about?
He tracks 4 different meals. It opens up like he tracks his McDonald's hamburger back to its roots.
Yeah, I see where this
book
went.
And then, you know, so he went, he actually like bought a cow, and then he figured out how that cow becomes a McDonald's hamburger, and then he goes back and he goes through like whatever organic, like, you know, an organic turkey you pick up off
the
shelf at your supermarket. Right. You kind of find out how organic, quote unquote, that really is, you know, opens the door on some of these, you know, beautiful concepts of your food is not, you know.
I don't care as long as it fucking tastes good.
That's right. Truth in advertising. So
nicely chosen.
Yes, sir.
What are we on? 6?
6.
I'm going to say... Swan Song by Robert R. McCammon.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Before you get into it, yeah. I haven't read this, and it's just a blaring omission in my read list. I need to get this book read.
80s horror isn't complete without this one.
No, sir.
It's another post-apocalyptic book that it seems like everything I'm into is post-apocalyptic.
I know. I remember back in the day, this was sort of spoken as McCammon's version of The Stand.
Yeah, but this book is way more ruinous.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, things are just, like, destroyed, and there's no food to be had.
Right. A real dark.
There's no hope.
Yeah.
You know, like, when you read The Stand, there was always, like, that hope was still around.
Yeah.
This book just gave me that feeling of hopelessness.
Bleak.
And you know what? I will say this much about this book. It didn't date well. Like, if you go back
and read it now, it's a little rough.
You're really going to say, holy crap. But wow, what a book. Like, in its time, what a book.
Yeah.
Stuck to your ribs.
Yeah. My number 6. Once again, go with nonfiction, but of a different sort this time. And it was a book called Columbine, which was about the Columbine shootings. And it was amazing book. The guy who wrote this, Dave Cullen, I did a smack-up job just recounting everything. And he told it very balanced. But he did this all like 10 years after the fact, after all the dust settled, after real, you know, the real truth of matters things. And it's another big thing is when you read this, like, it's amazing to really see all the shit that was twisted up and crap in the media and how they got things wrong.
Well,
it is
the media.
Yeah. And especially when you get a frenzy like that around a story like that.
Right, right. So everybody wants to be there first with the most.
Yeah. And then, you know, any little I heard, you know, without fact checking, and then those things run away with themselves. And he painted, you know, he didn't point fingers at the two kids that shot the place up. It was just like, this is what happened. It's just very compelling to read that story like that for like the probably the most truest version that you could read of it.
Right.
So it stuck with me in the tune of a top 10. Number 5.
All right. I'm going to go nonfiction myself.
Good.
Yeah. I'm going to throw up my nonfiction.
Yeah, I've been waiting for this because I know you're nonfiction-y like I am, too.
All right. This one is Death in the Long Grass by Peter H. Capstick.
That's an unfortunate name.
Yes, it is. But however, this guy was a professional hunter in Africa.
Okay.
And he tells you tales of lion hunting and water or Cape buffalo hunting and crocodile hunting.
So
and
like the true big game hunter.
Right. Like, you know, he was a professional hunter, which those who don't know means you're a guide. And when he writes, he has like a humorous vision of himself. Right, like where he's not like taking himself very seriously.
Yeah.
Like when he screws up, like he's like, yeah, and I nearly killed myself on that one.
Yeah.
Just like the way he describes Africa and the scenes, and like you could almost taste that grass pieces floating through the air. Almost like you could feel it. It's like
really
you're almost there.
Yeah.
He puts you like right in the center of it.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. He is a big game hunter, so it seems a little off to me that he would write so... Well, is he the actual writer?
He's the actual writer. So he's doing I believe his story is he started like writing for Field and Stream and
Nature magazine type
and
thing.
Like he was an educated guy. Like he was like on Wall Street before he left it to go to Africa. And don't forget, this was Africa, you know, back in like the late 60s, early 70s. What I'm trying to say is if you have any interest in reading about big game hunting in Africa and safari, because let's face it, I'll never be able to afford to go do it.
Right.
So it's like as close as I'm ever going to get.
Yeah.
It's probably like the best crap ever written on the subject.
Right. All right. My number 5 is not that intense. It's fiction, but this could have been one of those stories that's not nonfiction, but is rooted heavily in the truth, you know?
Right, right.
Could have been any story.
Mm-hmm.
Surprised me that I liked this as much as I did, but there's no denying this guy isn't just an excellent writer. And I had to pick between both of his books that I read. Either one could have been top number 5 right here, but I had to lean this way. It's The Kite Runner by Khalid Hosseini.
I read it, so
yeah,
I'm with you on it being a very interesting book.
You got a nice slice of life of Afghanistan there through about, 30 years, roughly?
Yeah.
Life there for the last 30 years through, you know, Soviet control and then through the, you know, Taliban and all that stuff, through the eyes of a little boy. I found it to be one of them stories, like, where you get, there's just certain parts that, like, you get to chill, like, run up your spine, like, just shit so real or so just, oh, man, get you. It's just hardcore, solid storytelling.
Like,
you know, he does very well, too, is he puts in the language in the book, but he writes it in a way where he explains what the word is one way or another very seamlessly.
Yeah.
And
you're right. That now that you're mentioning it, that is
he's
a
like
pretty good.
The Baba, this guy and that. And, you know, and you get it's a lot of Afghani language, but you're not ever lost on it. He explains it without like making you feel stupid. You know, he's not just defining it. He pulled that stunt off nicely. Okay, so let's hit number 4 for you, sir.
I'm going to go with Sand in the Wind by Robert Roth.
All We Are Is Sand in the Wind.
This is the coolest book about the Vietnam War I ever read. It follows a bunch of Marines through Vietnam.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's the characters or the writing style or what it was about this book. Probably one of the best books in that genre. Unfortunately, it's out of print.
Uh-huh.
So good luck finding a used copy of it somewhere. If you have any interest in the Vietnam War and reading any of that stuff, that's the book I would point you to.
Yeah.
If you look it up online, it's like all the Vietnam vets all like... We're all
yeah,
like,
I was going to ask you how
they all seem. Yeah, they're like I was there, and like that's how it was. At least these guys here were Marines.
Yeah. All right, we're gonna go for me number 4 back into nonfiction food fare, and it's probably the most recognizable of those books. It's Fast Food Nation, Eric Schlosser. I mean, the guy is probably set off the current food revolution. The lash out against a fast food industry is probably the biggest reason why, you know, McDonald's is all of them have changed their practices, because he brought to light just every ugly truth about the fast food industry.
Well, we worked it.
We did work it.
Would you say he was correct from having
you know
an
what?
Insider's perspective.
What, he dug so deep it had nothing to do with you or I did behind the counter or a
no, but like what we saw or none of that.
You know what? It was more about the sourcing of things. You know, I knew about pink slime long ago before it just hit the news in yeah. recent times. So yeah. anybody who's read Fast Food Nation knew about the pink slime years and years ago and just shit like that. I'll tell you this. It didn't make me write off fast food to begin with, but I probably stopped going. You know, if I get to a fast food joint once every 3 months or so, it's a lot. And this book, whenever I do, it's not far from the back of your mind when you think about things. Number three for you, Mr. Man.
I'm going to go The Legacy of Hayrot by
that sounds old.
Larry Niven, Jerry uh-huh. Purnell, and Steve Barnes, a triple threat. This is a science fiction book. They're colonizing a new world that National Geographic sponsored.
Okay.
Like they put everybody in suspended animation.
Right.
With like seeds and, you know.
I'm already embryos. Feeling like the Truman Show in outer space.
Well, I'm getting to it.
Yeah.
All right. And when they land on the planet, they have to not only deal with the local flora and fauna.
Yeah.
Which may or may not be hostile to them, but also the effects of being frozen for like 1,000 years or something in the slow ship. And how the crystallizations from the ice in your brain has can make you retarded or make you crack or make you unstable. And it was just a really cool book about humans colonizing another planet. Like you could almost see it happening this way.
Right.
And all the trials and tribulations.
Right. Not that just go getting there.
It.
But
it's not. Yeah. It's not just getting there and shooting aliens. It's like a whole thing.
Yeah.
It's one of the first sci-fi things that like I read and turned me on to the whole genre.
Wow.
It's a special book.
Very special to you.
Special to me.
All right. My number three is also pretty special to me. In my earlier years, I was, you know, very heavy reader. I always had a book. And after I had my first kid and everything like that, going to school, I really fell out of reading hardcore for probably a couple of years, 2 or 3 years easily, where, you know, maybe I read one or two books over the course of a year. It was like a really bad layoff. This book came out and I was dying to get my hands on it. And actually, you lent it to me.
I did.
You did. And I read this book, and this book was not only great, but it was the catalyst to get me back into my reading form again. Like, after I read this, I just wanted to read more, and it kind of reopened new things for me. Because this is probably, I have to say, the first nonfiction biography, nonfiction thing I'd read.
All right.
And it is Motley Crue's The Dirt.
Wow.
Number three. Yeah. And
that's pretty cool. Like, who would... Yeah. I wouldn't even, like, I read it. Obviously, I lent it to you. Sure. I mean, I loved it. And
but never, yeah, this did.
I wouldn't really think that would be.
You know, obviously, it's the definitive rock band story. But it ranks so high for me, not just because of, you know, the story, but for what it did for me. Reading, it brought me back into reading, got me excited about wanting to read. It got me excited about, you know, wanting to read new genres. I started reading, you know, without The Dirt, I would never have picked up Fast Food Nation, as strange as that sounds, but opened me back up to reading in a big, bad way.
Dude, whatever kickstarts your heart.
And, what else do you want me to say after that? Number two
for me. Team Yankee, Harold Coyle, a fictional story of World War III in Europe, where it's conventional weapons, no nuclear nonsense.
Okay.
Just like us and the Soviets fighting it out with men and tanks.
Okay.
And all that stuff. I don't really know why I have it at number two. I just couldn't leave it off my top 10 list. And mm-hmm. then I was looking at everything else and I'm like, well, I think I enjoyed this book better than that, than that, than
it
that.
It just kept
that.
Working its way up.
And it just kept working its way up as I'm just checking stuff off in no particular order.
My number two, you brought it up already, so it had to show up on mine, no doubt. Stephen King, The Stand. I mean, you know, you're number 10. I'm up to number two. This is definitely one of those cases where this could be number one for me 2 months from now if I think about it. So, I mean, that's it. We've talked about it. Stephen King's Stand, number two.
And we're up to number...
The big number one.
My favorite book on here is Gust Front by John Ringo.
Oh,
it's
Mr.
book
Johnny
number
Ringo.
Two in the Legacy of the Aldenatus saga.
Uh-huh.
which is, it's a whole series of books. I think it's like 8 books or something.
Yeah.
I'm not, off the top of my head, I'm not really sure. It's a whole thing about aliens invading and us fighting back and teaming up with other races to get the technology to, you know, fight the battles. But we're really being used by these other races. There's other races that are real smart but can't fight. And we're like not so smart, but we fight really well. I can't in 30 seconds describe this whole space opera.
Sure.
It's too much. It's too intense. If you want more information on my number one book on the list, the only way you can get an ebook for it is to go to Bane.com. BAEN.com.
Right.
The only thing cool about that is all their books are $6 ebooks. And I really enjoy their website. They get give you free shit all the time. They'll loan books. Their stuff is a little more patriotic. We'll leave it at that.
Okay. Fair enough. All right. So we'll polish off here. My number one, big drum roll, is The Thief of Always by Clive Barker.
Ooh, that's a good book.
You've read that one?
Yes, I have.
That's almost a fairy tale. Yeah, it's simple. It's almost it's almost like young adult too. For you know,
yeah, it definitely is like
an
adult
and book. A big time departure for any most Clive Barker. You know, it's nothing as dark and bloody and rapey as most of his stuff is. It was like a fairy tale for grown-ups.
Yeah, it was.
And
it was good.
Always stuck with me, and I've always said it's my number one, even when I wrestle with The Stand possibly being better. So well, there it is, man. That's our top 10. You want to quick run down your list real quick?
Sure. I don't know if I can put it back in the same order, but
that's all right.
We'll say number 10, The Stand by Stephen King. Number 9, After Age by Yvonne Navarro. Among Madmen by Jim Starlin. Out of the Ashes, William Johnstone, book 1 of the Ashes series. Then we must have went to Swan Song by Robert R. McCammon. And then I think we went to Death in the Long Grass, Peter H. Capstick. Then I believe we jumped to Sand in the Wind, Robert Roth. And then we went Legacy of Hayrot, Larry Niven, Jerry Purnell, and Steve Barnes. Then we went Team Yankee, Harold Coyle. Why can't I say Harold?
Why can't I
say Harold tonight? And then Gus Front, book 2 of The Legacy of Aldenada by Johnny Ringo.
Wow. That's a hell of a top 10. All right, my top 10 real quick before we break into anything. Number 10 was Ghost and Lightning, Trevor Byrne, the Irish hooligan story. Number 9, Dark Hollow by Brian Keane, the man. Number 8, World War Z, the Bible of Zombies. Number 7, Omnivore's Dilemma, Michael Pollan. Number 6, Columbine by Dave Cullen. Number 5, The Kite Runner by Khalid Hosseini. Number 4, Fast Food Nation, Eric Schlosser. Number 3, The Dirt, Motley Crue and Neil Strauss. Number 2, The Stand by Stephen King. And number 1, The Thief of Always, Clive Barker.
Nice. Good selections.
I was, just to quick break down the list a little bit, this is fun. I was kind of making notes as you were doing your list. First of all, clearly, as I've always known, you're a big war guy. In some way or another. Lots of books about war one way or another.
I guess.
You're into like apocalypse type books. Perhaps maybe dystopian worlds.
Perhaps.
Is a bit of a theme there with you. I was surprised at the... Well, I wasn't surprised at the level of war. I was surprised that we only had really 2 straight-up sci-fi books out of you.
Yeah, well, like I said, I tried to keep
The balancing act.
To keep the balancing act.
And what's cool about your list, too, is like outside of Stephen King, there's like no major titles on your list. I can't tell you I've actually heard of it. I mean, I know like Out of the Ashes from you, but if I didn't know you, I probably wouldn't have known even that much. That was kind of cool about your list to see that, you know.
Well,
it's nice that everything isn't fucking James Patterson.
Well, I don't know. I guess I read what I like, right?
Yeah. That's cool. Like I have World War Z is a huge book right now. Kite Runner, everybody knows. Fast Food Nation was a huge book.
Oh, yeah. That book was huge,
The Stand.
I mean, could you really leave The Stand out of your top 10, even with our kind of piss on King attitude?
You know what?
You can't.
No. I was surprised I came up. 4 out of my 10 picks are nonfiction.
Almost 5 because The Kite Runner is...
The Kite Runner is almost in it.
Is
almost
like
nonfiction.
Almost.
And horror, 3 books of horror for me.
Which I was surprised that it was horror.
It's
horror light, really.
Yeah.
But then again, I know with your Fast Food Nation love of books like that.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Horror books. I love reading horror books, and I read more horror books, obviously, than any kind of food nonfiction. But
no, I'm really disappointed.
Yeah.
That Cripple Wolf didn't make your top 10.
I wrestled with it. If it wasn't for that damn House of Cats, it probably would have got it. So there it is, our top 10. So no better time than to get to a little drinking.
Drinking time.
It's time to scream. Bieber!
I want my world to be fun. No parents, no rules, no nothing. No one can stop me.
I'm just a regular kind of 16-year-old kid. I make good grilled cheese. And I like girls. No one can stop me. No one can stop me.
I want my world to be fun. No parents, no rules, no nothing. No one can stop me. No one can stop me.
I'm just a regular kid. I make good grilled cheese. And I like girls. No one can stop me.
No one can stop me. No one can stop me.
Oh, yes. And why? Why are we screaming Justin Bieber quotes?
Because I have no idea even to recall. We're doing the four G's.
We're doing something that has nothing to do with what we're screaming. It's the 4G tasting.
The four G's.
We promised you fine folks a bottle versus can tasting and
time constraints. Yeah, didn't work out.
Time constraints, the logistics of getting it done just didn't work out for this episode. But we did pick up beer in cans.
Beer in cans. High gravity beer in cans.
Oh, yeah. We got ourselves four interesting brews, malts, whatever the hell they are.
High gravity malt liquors.
We have the high gravity earthquake lager. We have Tilt,
which is no longer high energy, just high gravity.
We have the King Cobra.
The King Cobra by Anheuser-Busch.
And we have the mother of them all, the granddaddy.
Four Loko. Blue raspberry flavor.
Uh-huh. Now, two of these, like you said, were once energy drinks until college folk started just obliterating themselves.
And still be awake.
Yeah, who knew that something worse than Red Bull and vodka was Red Bull and beer?
Yeah, you know, really.
I guess because you could pack away even more. Was it legal or was it social pressure that forced the energy aspect out of it? I'm not quite sure.
It was social pressure. Kid girls were getting raped because you're like completely out of your friggin'
doors. It was sort of it was probably one of them voluntarily taking a Red Bull out, but
the FDA weighed in
only because of threat of we're going to make you if you don't do it. So.
Yeah.
They're no longer higher energy drinks.
There is
a certain amount. I guess everybody swiped them off the shelves,
right?
With the energy drinks in them. So there is a black market. I'm very well aware of. All right. So there's no better time than the present, right?
Hey man, let's try.
Hey,
out
you know what we got to do? We got cans, but it don't matter. You know why?
Because
we have the bottle wrench. The bottle wrench, as we've already proven, has no problem with cans.
Not whatsoever.
Not one bit. So we're going to snap open these cans with the bottle wrench. And you, too, can snap open cans of your own with the bottle wrench. If you go to thebottlewrench.com and get yourself, they have different size bottle wrenches at different price points. But whatever price point you pick out your bottle wrench, make sure you enter in the code
BBBSSHOW.
BBBSSHOW.
Click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner.
Yeah, something like that. There's a promo code somewhere.
Promo codes.
Yeah. And you're going to get yourself a sweet bottle wrench at 15% off.
Nice.
Never pay retail.
Never pay retail again.
Beautiful product. American made.
Bottle wrench.
Bottle wrench to open up these American beers.
These American beer cans.
All right. So what do you say we get into Earthquake?
Earthquake?
Yeah, we're going to do some Earthquake first. There you go, sir. That's a big, hefty one.
I need the bottle wrench.
Right, here's your bottle
open.
Wrench, sir. Snap
now,
that.
Now, for those who don't know, Earthquake is a high-gravity beer, 8.1% alcohol by volume, by City Brewing Company, Wisconsin. It's an American malt liquor.
Yes.
It used to come in a 12%.
Uh-huh.
But they've discontinued that.
That's true. I wonder if they got crap for that. He dropped it back to 8. You still got a 12% Four Loko. Oh, yeah. Look at the way that bottle wrench just takes care of shit. You know, we stayed true.
We did.
We said we'd open up every beer on the show with a bottle wrench, and we are doing it. Hey, it may not always be pretty, but it's open.
You might have damaged
it. It is the bottle wrench. I mean, you know.
But heck, it works on cans.
It still freaking opened it, all right? So if your little pop top ever snaps off your beer can, have the bottle wrench ready, man. It'll just smack that little tab open, no problem. Jeff has taken his signature sniff, and he is not at all impressed. Or what are you feeling? You feeling we're going to feel like the Tour de 40? Oh, I smell it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're going back Tour de 40.
This is...
It's just
I think this is worse.
Shit beer.
I think this is Tour de 40.
Okay.
In the can.
All right, here we go. Earthquake,
really?
Baby.
All right.
Let's do
it. I mean, it's not going to be vomit-inducing.
No.
I hope not.
I just hope it isn't as depressing.
Cheers.
It smells fruity.
Oh, here we go.
Here we go. Oh, God. Oh, Jesus. Oh, what the?
Is it top?
Is it bitter? What the hell is it? Skunky. Skunky taste.
I don't
taste.
Know if it's that
oh, skunk. God, man. It's like sour on the tongue or something.
I'm just so happy I didn't gag. That's such a nice change of pace.
Wow.
It is like a bad aftertaste.
It's a bad aftertaste.
It has like a disgusting fruity taste on the front
yes.
end. Like a rotten
as,
fruit.
Yeah, as you're going to drink it, you smell it, a
you know
fruity
what, know what it's kind of like? It kind of tastes like apple juice that
like
you like left
apple.
Out
yeah.
for like a day or so.
Yeah.
And then like once you're through that faint nastiness, then like the malty liquor.
That soury aftertaste.
Comes through and the alcohol taste and
well, I'll say this for it. It has more of a flavor profile. I'm not gonna tell you it has more you know, better flavor it has more of a flavor profile to it than a 40 of like, you know, Colt or
yeah.
Steel Reserve. But it's not a good taste.
It smells horrible. I don't know, man. There's something wrong with that shit.
All right. Let's move on to the next beer. We have let's go with the King Cobra. Anheuser-Busch's King Cobra, the lowest alcohol by volume of our 4G tasting.
All right, let's just see what it says on the can. Get this open. Smooth tasting premium malt liquor, naturally brewed from select ingredients for your drinking pleasure and complete satisfaction. 6% alcohol by volume in a nice black 24-ounce can.
Yeah.
Now, see, I have the bottle wrench down now.
Sure.
You hear the way that just popped
just
for me?
Blammo. Yeah.
The first
it's
one,
a little
I got a little aggressive with
yeah.
it.
Well, it's fun, you know, learning the technique. Now, of the four, this one's weird. It's not even a high gravity beer, but it definitely markets itself in and amongst the Tilts and the Four Locos. It's just malt liquor. I mean, this is essentially just a 40 ounce in a can, right? No.
Wait till you get a nose full of this stuff.
Is it getting worse? All right, let's see.
It is. It's back to 40 in the can.
Oh, yeah, that definitely smells like 40-ouncer. Just a shitty malt liquor. All right, let's give this shit a whirl. What?
Yeah, what?
What?
What? What? I don't taste no pork. I don't taste no clams.
Where's the hibiscus?
Where's the hibiscus? God damn it.
There's nothing to this. It's just, I don't know. Nothing.
Tastes like nothing.
It tastes like nothing.
There is no taste.
There's no beer taste?
There's no beer taste. There's no.
I would almost say that this is a reverse of the earthquake, whereas I don't smell anything at all. But when I first sip it, I sort of get a little like fruity hint. Just there's no aftertaste to it.
You might as well just like give me a glass of water.
You know what you can use this for? This would be good for a base for us where we could fucking throw our own weirdness together. A little concoction, you know. We could mortar and pestle some hibiscus and pour it in there and swill it around and you can have anything you want.
Yeah, you could. You could have, but you might as well just eat the hibiscus.
You might as well. Let's just
this
some.
Ain't adding nothing to it.
All right, so the King Cobra is, I don't know what it's the king of, but it ain't. Fucking beer. So, let's move along in our tasting. Let's hit up the other Anheuser-Busch Fair. This is Tilt. This Tilt. Is the Anheuser-Busch version of a Four Loko. And obviously, like we said, there's no such thing as full-on energy drinking beer. This is, a reimagined version of that.
Oh, this is going to be lovely. This is a malt beverage with natural and artificial flavor and certified color.
Certified color?
Certified
now,
color.
Let me speak what about the tilt a little bit, about the color, now that you bring it up. In the refrigerator case there was a blue can of tilt, there was a red can of tilt, there was a green can of tilt. None of them discerned anything about what those colors meant. It doesn't even say, like, red tilt, blue tilt. It doesn't say flavor. Like, I was clueless. So I went about choosing. We have the red tilt, and only because that one had the least amount in its little row, so I figured people were buying that one the most. So that's why we have the red tilt.
Well, I can tell you this much. The red tilt?
It's red.
It's red in color.
I see that. As you've busted it open now, it is red in color. All right. So we got a little red tilt. The first true. Yeah. Wow. It's
that's lovely.
It's like beer punch.
It is. It looks like fruit punch. It looks like fruit punch soda.
All right. Oh, this is going to smell special, I think. Oh, that smells special.
Don't drink the red tilt.
That is the most comedic smell of a beer we've ever done on this podcast to date.
It smells like fruit punch. It smells like fucking
no, it doesn't.
You don't think so?
Jesus Christ. That is the most comedic. It's funny.
It is.
And not funny smelling. It's just funny.
Smells funny.
No, it's just funny.
It's just funny.
It's just funny to smell it.
Can we just smell it and skip it?
Man,
it smells sickly sweet. Sickly,
dude, you get the sweetness like you're smelling like a Kool-Aid or a Hawaiian punch, but then the beer horse shit smell comes up right behind it, and that's when it goes funky.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean?
I didn't get in there deep enough.
Get it? Yeah.
Brings a tear to your eye.
Oh, it changes your whole perspective, doesn't it?
So this is 12% alcohol.
Yeah, this one is high. It's great. If nothing else, they're going to get us so drunk that we're going to think it tastes good.
That's 24 proof.
Yeah, it's a hefty beer. It
is.
You're going to look at what the schnapps?
Yeah.
Up on the top.
16.5% alcohol.
So it's only 4% less.
33 proof.
Than a schnapps, raspberry schnapps. So this is
So if you want to,
this is kicking. This is going to be something special.
Let's bring on the specialness.
Let's go.
Let's get this done.
Oh.
I'm trying hard. I'm trying really hard.
Oh man, it burns. Oh, that gave me agita.
Oh man, can you imagine drinking?
Jeez, what?
I gotta get.
Oh God!
It's a gift that keeps giving. It just stays there. It just hits your tongue and says, "I'm setting up camp."
Oh, it finds some special places on your tongue, doesn't it?
It does. It finds the nooks and
just little
crannies.
Crevices off in the corners where you can't quite get at them. You know what it almost is like? It's almost like even in consistency. You know, you've made Jello, like made Jello, and I just bought it.
Yeah.
It has the consistency of like when you pour the hot and the cold water in.
Yeah.
Before it
chills.
And it doesn't taste that far off from being Jello in beer.
Wow. You know what this tastes like?
Yeah. Fucking man. Jesus.
I think I have the analogy for
one. All right.
You made yourself some Alabama slammers.
Uh-huh.
Right? And you left them in the shaker overnight. The next day you come down and go, it seems like a good idea. Why not just go to waste?
Yeah. Oh, it's like you know what it's like? It's almost like that. You made some Alabama slammers, right? But all your friends are drinking beer too.
Right.
And you're waking up in the morning and you're like, eh. And then you just kind of poured everything into one cup and then you drink that.
Yeah, it's kind of like how it is.
It's stale beer, stale slammers. It's the beer ruins it. The beer ruins it.
Yeah,
like,
why?
It might not be. It's just a really, like, you know, used to go to the store, you just get them little fruit. There's no other thing. It's just red drink.
Right.
It's just red drink.
Yeah. It's red drink.
I got a quarter. I'm going down to the corner store and get me some red drink.
Some red drink in a little plastic thing you put.
So this is all it is. Somebody took red drink.
Red drink.
Put some beer in it.
Put some beer
in it.
A little grain alcohol.
Oh.
Just to bump up the proof.
Yeah, it is mega sweet, but just the beer fucking destroys whatever redeeming quality
this
might
have. I
mean,
how much do you have to hate beer to have to go and drink this?
If this is the tilt, like, this is the low-rent version of Four Loko, really, from Anheuser-Busch. So
I guess.
There is no other thing to do than to check into the Blue Raspberry Four Loko. One more to go, sir. The granddaddy, the Four Loko.
The blue. I'll have some of the yeller.
You got some yeller. All right. Let's pop open the Mr. Four Loko.
Look at that.
Thank you, Mr. Loko.
Technique with the beer.
Oh, man. See, the more you get good at it, the more you get good at it. Now, what I like about these cans, this is why it is the granddaddy.
This is why it is the granddaddy.
I think it's both.
This is the blue drink.
The tilt and the Four Loko.
What a nice blue color.
Oh, that
nice
is.
Fizzy soda.
It looks like
soda-like
blue
head.
Carrosco, Carrocco, Carrocco, whatever.
Curacao.
Curacao, yeah, that's the one. Yeah, it has that electric lemonade look about it.
You smell that shit? It's permeating.
I'm not picking it up yet.
Oh, that was condensation.
Condensation from the blue drink.
The blue drink is sweating.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Oh, there it am. Oh, look at that blue.
It's
you know
clear,
what?
It's liquid blue.
This blue deserves an Instagram. This blue I can make really special with a filter.
You know, I'm hoping that this one's actually good. Maybe I like blue raspberry flavor.
You know, it's funny. I just took a picture for the Instagram.
Yeah.
Of the cup with the blue drink in it, and really what the picture just looks like is a picture of a toilet bowl with blue water and swirling around in it. So for all you fine folks.
Blue drink.
Blue drink.
It's the blue
this
drink.
This is not as deep blue as the red is red.
No.
Like you can see the bottom of the cup through
right,
the blue.
This is a crystal blue.
Yeah.
All right, you ready? You ready for some blue drink?
I am as ready as I'm going to be. Let's get some blue drink.
Blue drink on.
It's almost not bad. The smell.
That smell.
The smell is bad.
Let me
pinch
try.
Pinch the nose.
Tastes like a shot. You know what you need?
It's not as sweet as the tilt.
No, you could pour this into shots. And no one would know the difference. You'd just be like, here, try some of my blue drink shot.
Yeah. It's almost okay.
As long as you're not talking about beer, as long as you're talking about a shot.
It's better than the tilt.
Yeah, it was better than the tilt, yeah.
Because it's not as sweet.
There's not as much blue as there is red. I wonder why you can't get this like on tap.
What, are you fucking kidding me?
I'm going to go to the bowling alley and go, give me a pitcher of Four Loko.
You know what? If you're ever going to find Four Loko on tap, it's going to be at a bowling alley. I'm really feeling like I like this Four Loko the best.
Really?
Because I'm thinking, like I said, within the scope of beer with a Red Bull, right? And their energy drinks, regardless of what they all taste like shit. It's got that funny taste about it.
Right.
But then if I forgive it that, it's not, it is what it is. That's what I'm giving it.
I'm going to give it, it tastes like shit, and I'm going to call the King Cobra the champion.
Okay.
And if they knock the alcohol percentage up to 12.
Yeah, make it a high gravity.
Then you'd be talking about something.
That might be something.
Not quite that disgusting.
Yeah, I'm going to play devil's advocate. I'm going to say the Four Loko is my beer because it's just the right amount of strange.
If you say so.
All
I
right.
Still say it tastes like.
Well, either way, we just drank the 4G tasting, so you
don't have to.
So let's start our bullshitting. And I think the first thing we need to bring up is, as we mentioned near the top of the show, we've been very busy with concert going the last couple of weeks.
Yes.
We had a Flogging Molly concert, for those in the know. And then the following weekend after that, we had the big Kiss Motley Crue concert, which we teased earlier on in our podcast.
Episode one or
like,
two?
Yeah, two or three, something like that. We finally hit it. It was like the end of the tour, end of the summer. At least as far as Books, Beer, and Bullshit is concerned, we had our street crew.
Handing out
street
cards.
Team.
Street team was
handing out cards. Now, by initial looks, it doesn't look like...
we
for all our business cards we handed out, we garnered much listening. But who knows? Maybe, you know, parking lot hangovers, still recovering. Maybe it took you a couple weeks to get around it. So maybe you're just, maybe you just found our card hanging onto that used condom package with the two pinholes through it. What did I do?
Crumpled pack of
right,
smokes.
So, oh, geez. I told these guys I listened to them. All right. So you're popping it on. So if you did happen to meet the Books, Beer, and Bullshit street crew, you either met myself and Jeff personally, or you met our two whores, our two street crew whores. We dressed them up like a bunch of trollops and sent them off with the beer cards. And all they did was come back with a bunch of cans of Red Bulls.
Yeah, well, that was all right.
So either way, if you are joining us in the next dozen years or so from the Motley Crue Kiss concert at the PNC Bank Arts Center, welcome aboard, fuckers.
Yeah, welcome.
If you've even fucking come this far through the podcast to hear about it, then welcome aboard, fucker.
Fucker. Yes.
Imagine 200 cards are handed out. We might get one fucker. Either way, dude, I had a fun time street teaming with you.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty cool.
That's your MO, man. You are street team.
I am good at that.
If you've been to a bookstore and bought a book, you know, maybe you bought Catch 22 or 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and you open it up and, like, you know, page 73, there's this fucking Books, Beer, and Bullshit. HTTP. Maybe.
That was me. Go,
yeah, that was Jeff. He is the street team. If there's been a face to the podcast for you, it was Jeff's face. If it's social media, I'm the Twitter guy. I'm the Facebook guy. That's me. I'm the social media face of the whole thing. Jeff's the real face of the podcast.
I am.
He enjoys the shit out of street teaming.
I do.
The other concert we went to, the Flogging Molly show, there was actually a chick.
I did. I ran into
a fuzzy booted woman.
A cyber goth.
Yeah.
Well, reformed cyber goth.
Reformed cyber goth.
No, that was a whole scene because she had like 63 guys around her.
Yeah.
So I just like... pushed my way into the middle.
Yeah.
And just like said, dude, are you a cyber goth?
Cyber goth.
And she was like, well, yeah, but I'm not so much into that scene anymore. I was like, so you're a cyber goth? She's like, well, yeah. And I was like, okay, well, now I can say I met one. Thank you.
There you go. I should have recruited her for her cyber goth dance crew.
Because the Books, Beer, and Bullshit.
Yeah,
cyber
the Books, Beer,
and
so you think you could cyber dance, cyber goth dance. You know, we're going to take that show by storm. Oh, man. So what else, man? So we had a lot of concert goings. Let's talk a little bit about our formula switch-ups. We decided, like, some things are, as much as they worked in the beginning, they just get stale beating that horse.
Yes.
So, you know, tonight was a prime example. We didn't review a book. We just gave you a top 10 list. And actually, our next show, we'll talk about it a little later. Our next show is going to switch up. It'll be a book review, but there's a little tweak on that idea. And even our beer tasting, you know, the bad beer is not going to go away by any stretch of the imagination.
No, this was I really, truly enjoyed the bad beer tasting.
Yeah.
I want to stick with that format.
Right.
Just because I enjoy doing it.
Right. Well, we might not step away from that nearly as much as we will
the book review. The
book
type
review,
thing.
Constant.
Right.
And then, I mean, you know, the most free form of the whole podcast is right here, the bullshitting.
Right.
So, yeah, what do you tweak? Nothing. We get call ins, we get, you know, interviews. It's free form. You can't change that. It is what it is. Wow. Dude, word travels fast.
What's that?
We're in your studios, right?
Right.
One half of our street crew whores are upstairs. And already I'm getting a text from the other street crew whore who is not in this building.
Saying that she's
saying
a street crew.
Saying street crew whores? Seriously?
Seriously?
In all caps.
Wow.
So we just lost our street crew whores.
Anyone who would like to be a Books, Beer, and Bullshit
street crew whore,
send your photo and your
should we
reason why you'd want to be part of the Books, Beer, and Bullshit.
There's only one reason
crew
why.
In 140 characters or less.
I have a pair of very hairy boots.
Do you?
You're in.
Yeah. Fucking hired. Here's some shit. Get out there. Start stickering. Here's a bunch of flyers and a stapler. Hit it. Hit it.
I don't know if we're going to record again. I'm headed to Florida, sunny Florida, at the end of October.
Yes, you are.
And
a little vacation.
I have it on my itinerary. I'm going to go meet our buddy, Armand Rosamilia.
All right.
He's hosting a speaking engagement on the 22nd.
What's he speaking on?
Well, not speaking. It's a book signing, I think, at a bar. I think he's going to bring a handful of books under his arm.
Oh,
and then hope somebody buys him one of his books in a shot for himself.
Right, and he's going to read some passages?
I guess if you give him a blowjob.
Well, loosen up your, bring your knee pads.
Right, so I'm going to go down there. I wish I could make some sort of a podcast event out of it. We're not that technologically advanced at this moment.
No, we're still at the, we're still at the beginner level.
Right. It would be cool because I have every intention of hugging him and then tugging on his fucking goatee. And then if I could like record that somehow, him knocking me out.
That would be pretty good.
That would be fun. So he's already called me a fucking asshole. If I could just maybe, I'll have my wife just videotape him, cell phone video. And we'll put that up as an accoutrement since it has been requested in the past that we provide video. It would be good if our first video was
you get
of Armand Rosamilia knocking me the fuck out. Speaking
That'd
engagement.
Be good.
Yeah, right? All right, we'll work on that.
So we had my mostly annual Oktoberfest party.
Yeah, we did. And you did that very cool beer tasting.
Which next year we'll have to make a part of the show.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. We had, what, 8 beers?
8 beers, yeah. Everybody brought a beer over.
Yep.
And we poured them out into little samples. Everybody had a taste of each one, and we voted on which one was best.
That's right. And it was a lot of fun to do that. It was doing our thing, you're in my thing.
Yeah, and, we're expert beer tasters.
That's right. And it was a little different because people were trying to bring good beer to the table.
Yes, and there were a couple of good ones.
Yeah, but they were all interesting in and of their own way. Yeah, we should definitely, I think, as much fun we had with your beer tasting this year, I think we should cover it for the podcast next year. I think that would be a lot of fun for everybody to kind of sit in on.
Yeah, we could get a couple mics out there and
Yeah, because there was, you and I just sort of, I guess we're doing what's come natural to us now. We were taking sips and kind of commentating out loud on it.
Right.
And everybody at first thought it was kind of weird, but they were slowly like
getting into it
and offering their own opinions. And by the end, I was like, man, I wish we had some mics out here. It would have been fun to just kind of cover this as an event.
Yeah.
All right. So that's it for tonight. Like I said, we're in the middle of very, very busy schedules. We're going to really try. I don't know how successful we're going to be in getting another episode out for you. I am going away on vacation later in the month, so I don't know if we're going to be able to sneak one in, hopefully, before I leave. Either way, we are trying something new with our book review, like we said. This time, we're going to do a book swap.
A book swap?
A book swap.
Like, I give you one, you give me one?
Exactly like that.
Did I sound surprised as if I didn't know that's what was going on exactly?
You did. Impressive amount of acting, sir.
Man, I am fucking theater of the mind.
Yeah, so what we come up with is a little bit of a twist on our book reviews. There's been books that I wish we could review, either I've already read and it just wouldn't make sense to dig back into them. The same thing for Jeff. So what we've come up with is, the way to get that done is for him to hand me a book that, he wishes we could have covered on this podcast and me to him. And in that way, we're going to have 2 book reviews, not the same book.
Yeah.
And just something that Jeff has really enjoyed and wants to hand to me and vice versa, and we're going to do that book swap. And that should be cool because, that's in essence of any kind of book discussion, anything you do, is you always want to pass along a good book recommendation to somebody.
Right.
So in the spirit of that, of true readers, we're going to do a book swap.
All right. What am I getting?
You are getting a book called Cows.
Cows, huh?
By Matthew Stoke, or Stokoe. It's S-T-O-K-O-E. It's sort of spelled. I don't know how to pronounce it necessarily.
Sure.
It is a cult status type of book,
Okradokes.
It is vile.
Bizarro?
No. Not in the classic sense of the term. This book predates Bizarro. I picked it up and read it because a review I read about it was this book will, if you're not a person that's easily offended, this book will probably challenge you on your level of offensiveness. I can't tell you I was offended, but it did push some limits. It was, as far as this podcast goes, we reviewed Jenna LaGrinder, which was pretty out there. and graphic and nuts. This might be worse than that.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm going to hand you Cows and see what you think of it.
Alrighty. And for you, sir.
Yeah.
I shall be giving you one off my top 10 list.
Oh.
You will be getting The Legacy of Herot.
Oh, the epic recolonization novel?
Just the colonization.
The colonization, yeah. I'm happy to get that because going over your top 10, even though you're like, you know, you the vampire one, I guess you figured I would most want to check out.
Yeah.
The most, based on your, you know, discussion, was the most I wanted to check out was that book.
Well, good.
So that's what I'm getting.
You're getting that.
I look forward to that.
Tell me what you think, because it was something that got me into reading sci-fi.
And then, you know, that's it, man.
All right, man.
I guess until next time.
All right, all my our constant listeners, I shall say to you, peace out. You have been listening to Books Fear Bullshit, the stupidest podcast on the internet.
Oh, man, it burns. Oh, that gave me agita.